Welcome to That Makes Total Sense, a podcast dedicated to exploring God's generosity and justice. I'm Alexis Busetti, a Christian aiming to ask good questions and encouraging you to do the same. Every one of us is wired by God to live out generosity and justice, but the how sometimes eludes us. That Makes Total Sense is a way for us to get together, posture ourselves as learners, and challenge one another to practice generosity and justice in a tangible way every day. Hey, everybody. So today I want to do a little solo episode, and I want to talk a bit about our feelings. And the thesis of this short little reflection is, you know, for some of us, it's going to sound really obvious. And for others of us, we may have had experiences or have heard teachings that make us feel like this statement is a bit counterintuitive. But what I want to say is that God cares about our feelings. Like I said, that may sound kind of odd, but he really does. He cares about our emotions. He cares about how we feel about things and not just about the circumstances that might make us have the feelings about the things. He cares. He cares about how we feel, and he cares about our emotions. Now, one of the things that got me thinking about this again, and some of you know, some of you have like been to our house or are close friends and know that we have a Mastiff. You may have seen her on Instagram. She's super sweet. Her name is Brunhilde. We call her Hildy or Bear Bear or Build-A-Bear. And I got her for my birthday about 6 years ago. And she was a gift from my husband. We all went over just a hop, skip, and a jump over to Austin. And we saw these adorable Mastiff puppies. And it was up to me to say, no, we can't bring one home. Of course, we brought one home for my birthday. And depending upon her behavior, you might hear that fact said really affectionately in our best little doggy voice, like, oh, what a sweet, good birthday present, or she's the best gift ever. But when she's doing things that are particularly annoying, like waking us up too early, or when she has sprawled out her massive body on the kitchen floor, making it completely impossible for us to move around her and make dinner, you might hear things from the family like, well, she was your birthday present, or you're the one who wanted to get her. But the truth is, we love and adore this sweet pup. She's part of the family. And she's kind of small, actually, as far as Mastiffs go. She's only about 130 pounds. But she's got a bark that is a little bit bigger than her. And sometimes she startles people that walk down the sidewalk right in front of the house. And she makes herself in front of our little bay window and just lets people know that she's there and that she sees them, specifically if they're walking, you know, a really scary dog like a Chihuahua or something like that. Anyway, so she's a little bit small. She's got a big bark, and she is a complete and total scaredy cat. So this is getting back to the God caring about our emotions thing, but indulge me for a second with this story about my dog. So the biggest example that the kids like to cite about Hildy and her scaredy cat-ness is that she's terrified of trash cans. So it's like a beautiful day, and she's begged to go out for a walk, right? So we do everything that we have to do to get this big dog out the front door, and she makes it like down our walk. We start turning toward, you know, the driveway of the neighbors, and then there it is. There's a trash can. It's trash day, and she physically cannot go any further. She will stop mid-stride. She literally will put part of the leash in her mouth, turn her gigantic head away from where I'm trying to get her to go, and insist, practically drags whoever is taking her back home. Trash cans. She's terrified. But that's not the only thing that she's scared about. On occasion, we will see her or we'll hear her rather, like from another room, just this one little tiny bark. And we're like, what in the world? What's going on with Hilda? You know, of course, at first we'll think it's a, you know, a squirrel or a neighbor dog. And then we realize when it doesn't end, after a few moments, that one of us will go into whatever room she's in and realize, oh, you know, an ottoman got pushed in this, what she believes to be precarious position, and it's blocking her from where she is to where she is trying to be. Now, she's 130 pounds, and most of the time, it's not actually blocking her, right? It's just that the narrow pathway that she can see is, she thinks, not quite big enough for this damsel in distress to make her way to the other side. I promise it's the only time that she is somewhat aware of her enormous size is when something like that happens. And most of the time we just chuckle and we let her out. But the other day, one of these moments of her kind of acting like a scaredy cat got my attention. So we had friends coming over for dinner, and I was kind of splitting my day between doing my own homework and homeschooling the kids and cleaning house, kind of like on this rotation, right? And so because all of this was being done on a rotation, I had cleaning supplies kind of placed outside of the room on the floor in whatever room I was either had just come from or was headed to on my next cleaning stop. And that's the way it was outside of my room on this particular day. And I was on the rotation where I was doing my own homework. So I was sitting in my room in the chair reading. And I could hear, sometimes we call her shuffle, and I could hear her little shuffle feet coming on the floor in the hallway. And I expected her to come and plop down in front of me at my feet. And the shuffling stopped. I thought, well, that's odd. So I turned around to, you know, beckon her to come on in and keep me company. And then I noticed she's just standing in the hallway. Like, and so I try and cajole her. Come on, girl. And I'm doing the kissy noises and I'm patting my leg and she's not moving. And I could tell she wanted to, but again, it was like she was stuck and I was trying to figure out what she was afraid of. Why did she think she was stuck? So as I turned my head a little bit further, I could see that the broom was there kind of in the hallway, kind of next to her, leaning up against the wall. And she's looking at me like she wants to come in and then kind of turning her head toward the broom as if to make me aware of her obvious situation that if she tried to come, this broom might attack her. Like something's going to happen and she's going to be attacked by this broom. So I thought, this dog is absolutely ridiculous. She's in no danger. Nothing is happening to her. Just come on in. Just come on. And she wouldn't do it. She wasn't budging. So I know better. I've lived through this situation with her before. So I get up from my studies. I go over. And this time I didn't move the broom. I just stood in front of it. I left it leaning up against the wall where it was in that corner, and I just stood in front of it, and I put my body between her and her perceived threat, and I let her know that I wanted her to come where I was and that she was going to be okay if she did in fact make that journey. I didn't take the obstacle away from her, but I made a little bridge so that she could pass through freely. And as I was doing this, I thought, God cares about our feelings, right? This concept, this idea that is so basic, but so profound, first hit me like a ton of bricks, probably actually around the time that we were bringing Hildy home when she was a puppy. We were also waiting to bring home our youngest son from Africa, the one who we were adopting, and the situation had gotten really political, and I was continually just racked with anxiety when we were waiting for him to come home. There were a couple of years, and really those last few months, where it became more and more uncertain whether or not the situation was actually going to allow for us to come home with him. And, you know, thankfully all of that is done now, and there's a lot of details I won't bore you with, but you know, even conference calls with this Department of State, you know, just waiting, as they negotiated and we were, you know, asking them to advocate on our behalf, and hundreds of other families waiting for their children to come home. And every day, of course, our family prayed. And it felt like almost every day I cried. And I was second guessing, you know, what were we even doing here? How did we even get here in the first place? And all of this, of course, I can look back years later and see it slightly more clearly. All of these emotions came from the same base place in me. I was terrified. I was afraid that we were going to lose our child. And during that time, I was found myself in the Psalms a lot. And the time that it hit me like a ton of bricks that God really cares, you know, not just about our obstacles, but he cares about our feelings that we encounter when those obstacles come up. I was in Psalm 34. And this is one that I had read 100 times. And I'd been continually reading it. And I'm going to read it to you right now. And I'm going to point out where this hit me. So this is Psalm 34. You've heard it. You've heard it a number of times too. You've read it. You've sang it maybe. This is it. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me and let us exalt his name together. And here it is. Verse 4. I sought the Lord and he answered me and delivered me from all my fears. We're going to come back there, but I'm going to finish this psalm because it's so good. Verse 5. Look to him and be radiant, so your faces shall never be ashamed. This poor soul cried and was heard by the Lord and was saved from every trouble. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Happy are those who take refuge in him. Oh, fear the Lord, you his holy ones, for those who fear him have no want. The young lions suffer want and hunger, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. Come, O children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Which of you desires life and covets many days to enjoy good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against evildoers, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and rescues them from all their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord rescues them from them all. He keeps all their bones. Not one of them will be broken. Evil brings death to the wicked, and those who hate the righteous will be condemned. The Lord redeems the life of his servants. None of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. It's so beautiful. But what hit me in that moment was that the psalmist declares that God doesn't just want to deliver the psalmist from the danger in that moment that he's writing about, but he feels terrified. And he becomes convinced that the Lord wants to deliver him from that feeling too. That God wants to deliver him from his fears. This is huge. This is massive. God wants us to feel unafraid with him. He wants us to feel safe. So our youngest son did come home, and he's as sweet as pie. And for all of you parents out there, whether you're adoptive parent or not, you know that when the kiddo comes home, that's when the real work begins, right? So the journey to him getting home had been a torturous one, but then we really started the heavy lifting as parents of our fourth child. And each kid is different, right? So as we were doing our, I don't know, maybe we'll refer to it as parental continuing education, right? As we do, especially when we feel desperate, as I did, It was recommended to us that we engage with some of the resources from the late Dr. Karen Purvis and the research that she and her colleagues have done out of Texas Christian University. They're still do amazing work, by the way, and I'll link them in the show notes here. And they really have ministered to us over the years, and the work they do for families of they say children from hard places, which I love because I think that's all of us, right? We're all children from hard places. But this one particular idea that comes back to me probably the most frequently from Dr. Purvis and her team is this idea of felt safety. So this is how it's described in their literature. Felt safety is described when adults basically arrange the environment. This is what she says. Adults arrange the environment and adjust their behavior so children can feel in a profound and basic way that they are truly safe in their home and with us. She goes on to say, until a child experiences safety for his or herself, trust can't develop, and healing and learning won't progress. We offer felt safety so healing may begin. I want you to sit with that for a minute. It'll probably take a minute. It took me a minute. This felt safety, right? And I think, doesn't this sound just like the Lord? He wants us to feel safe with him, to have this profound and basic feeling of being truly safe with him. We don't know what's ahead of us. We don't know what's in front of us. And really, ultimately, I'm convinced more and more that that doesn't even matter as much as our learned ability to trust God. We all know by now, things will not always work out. God doesn't always remove the danger or the hardship. But he does, I believe, adjust the environment and try to get our attention, drawing it to himself so that we can feel in a profound and basic way that we are safe with him. For the children from hard places that Dr. Purvis talks about, healing and learning are dependent on this felt safety. And I think it's the same way for us as children of God. I know it goes back to the silly example. I knew that broom wasn't going to hurt my dog, but she didn't. So I moved, I got up, and I put myself in between that obstacle and her, and I called her to come to me. I know it's silly and it's with a pet, but in that moment it felt so profound. And I couldn't help but kind of chuckle as I did it and as I thought, like I delivered her from her fear, right? She got to come over. But this is what God does for us just on a much bigger scale, right? And the psalmist said he delivers us from our fears. That kind of affirms to me that he cares about our feelings, right? Whether our worries are warranted or not, he wants to draw our attention elsewhere, namely toward him for the sake of our healing, so that we can learn to trust in him. Jesus tells his followers not to be anxious, right? So does Paul. In the scriptures, the Holy Spirit is often called the comforter or the helper because we need that comfort, right? As the church, as brothers and sisters, we're to sit with each other when we're in mourning and when we're experiencing gladness. We set our hope on him. We're commanded to rejoice. God cares about our feelings. Now, he doesn't want them to own us or to lead us, but he definitely did create us to feel. We can see Jesus feeling. And I think he did this in part because our emotions, like all of them, if we'll let them, the good, the bad, and the ugly, can lead us to him. When we're afraid, we can look to him and gain trust. When we're anxious, we're reminded that Jesus tells us not to worry about tomorrow. And Paul encourages us to pray with thankfulness and hearts full of gratitude. When we're grieving, we can be reminded of those moments when Jesus wept. When our hearts are full of joy, we can be reminded of those moments that Jesus feasted and partied with his friends. When we need comfort, we can hear his kindness. When we feel like everything is lost, we can be reminded that there is hope in him, that he is near to the brokenhearted. So I know, in a way, this feels like 101, but it's good for me, and I hope it's good for you to come back to this every once in a while. The links for all the resources mentioned in today's episode can be found in the show notes. Music and podcast production by Seth Busetti. Be sure to give us a review on iTunes and subscribe at your favorite podcast listening app. You can also visit us at thatmakestotalsense.com.